welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm John Sands.
I'm Paul Carenza.
And I'm Jennifer Masters.
Hey. Hey.
And we're all back. It's normal service resume. Hey. No more specials.
There
this
you
is
go.
All topical.
Summer's over.
Cutting edge.
The rains have started. Down here, I've made a Christmas.
Well, so you're back from America.
Indeed. We've had a lovely time in America.
Yeah. Close enough. Ish. Same thing.
Tried to see some films in America so I could report in of what the Americans, you know, what we got coming up in over here.
What it's like in across the pond.
It's all the same. They're all same films, really.
Yeah, well, I think it's the trouble of someone blockbuster season. It's all just simultaneous worldwide everywhere so they can milk as much money out of us as possible. Mind you, I say that, Up, we still haven't had.
October, we get that, I believe,
And that was out months ago in America.
Yeah.
The DVD is readying itself
is it
in America.
Really? Yeah. Well, there you go.
Meanwhile, no Brits have even seen it. Ha.
I can't even report much fun things I saw on the flight because there was Adventureland, which is
Adventureland.
It's like a coming of age set in a theme park where, you know, one summer will change their lives forever. No, it won't.
No.
They'll just drink and swear like normal. And I Love You, Man.
Well, that's very kind of you, Paul. But what film did you watch?
Exactly. Well, Paul Rudd.
Such a disappointing look Jen just gave him.
You've seen, haven't you?
Yeah.
And it's all right.
It was all right. I wanted more from it.
I just want to see Paul Rudd do something else now, really. I've seen him in those sort of films. Role models and...
Oh, is this the one about the finding your best friend?
Yeah, exactly.
A best man.
Jason Segel.
That was all right.
It was all right, but it just wasn't anything. I wanted more from it.
They've always got a formula now. In that film, there's this bit where they learn about air guitars and actual real guitars, in fact, and then go to a concert with the band Rush. And
yes,
it's not really a formula.
Well, no, but in Role Models, it was Kiss, and then
let's pick
something nostalgic in
the
80s, and then let's do a thing about that. And
you need a common theme to bond around.
It's the whole bromantic thing, where actually there's the subplot of the actual romantic thing with him and his girlfriend.
Yes.
And same thing in Role Models and all these other films, where actually the female lead is sort of just stood around for most of the film going, it'll come back to me in the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, he goes off, does his boyish adventures, comes back and settles down a bit.
See, I hadn't actually really thought about
learned a lesson.
I hadn't really thought about the Role Models comparison.
To be a boy.
Well, yes. I hadn't really thought about the Role Models comparison when watching I Love You, Man. But yeah, that was a much better film.
Yeah.
Maybe not a better film as such, but it did more for me.
Mm.
Whereas I Love You, Man, I think, yeah, it's just treading similar ground in a slightly different way.
So back now, ready for business. And we've got lots of films to catch up on, haven't we?
We've got
Time Traveller's Wife.
Time Traveller's Wife and Inglourious Bastards.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Which may be the first time I've ever said that word on this podcast.
Well, there
but
you
it's
go.
Spelled we're, differently. That's
we're going to make
thing.
The most of it.
Oh,
we're
going to
be reviewing Inglourious Bastards.
But no, we looked into this a while back. You can
say it.
I think you either need to or should mark your podcast as explicit if you're being particularly explicit.
I think we can say
this
that.
Is the title.
Yes, we can say Inglourious Illegitimate Children.
Yes. No, I think in American terms it was because that's where I read that it was a generic podcast untagged, but it should be like PG-13 language, and they say bastard in PG-13.
Bastard.
Alright,
carried away with it. You know. It's just referring to the title of the film now. You know.
I was just checking.
So apologies if that's offended your sensitive ears. But then again, you would have seen the little description we were reviewing Inglourious Bastards.
Indeed.
So you must have assumed that we were going to say the title,
frankly.
And also, The Ugly Truth.
Ugly Truth, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Moving further down the scale
indeed.
Of quality films.
Yes.
And Coco Before Chanel.
Indeed, which is a rubbish dictionary, but it comes after. As we all know.
Oh, dear.
Yes, I'm a girl, I shall be doing that one.
Indeed. But we have lots of emails to catch up on as well, so should we do some of that to start
off
with?
Let's crack on with some emails.
First email we had was from Super Toys. Good afternoon, Mr. Toys. He says,
assuming his last name is Toys.
Well,
it could be like Stephen Ooper Toys.
It could be that, indeed. Yes, indeed. In which case, hello, Stephen. regards to the Ooper Toys family. Super Toys writes, I would like to thank you two... Three, he means three.
Aww.
You weren't there that week,
okay.
You know. For making me look like an ass at work. Oh, can we say ass?
I think so.
Can we say work? It's a dirty word to me.
Making us drink.
Yeah, he says, I was listening to the latest Bantercast and I couldn't contain my laughter about Phlegm 123, with Pendant 123, that's that one, and the scene about getting the money from A to B. I've yet to see the movie, but I might have to rent it based just on that. Sounds rather comical. It is. It's quite wrong. And then on G.I. Joe, we've had a lot of comments on G.I. Joe.
Yes.
According to Super Toys, it says, it looks too clean. When I think of the cartoon and real American Special Forces, I think of Down and Dirty, like the team in Predator. I do not plan to see this film. I do like the in no uncertain terms way, he writes that.
This will not be seen.
Indeed. And as a side note, he says, there's nothing to do with movies. I'm in love with the song I Want It All by Queen. So, Well, it's nice to know, isn't it?
It's a good song, good tune. Yeah,
exactly. So if you want to email in and just tell us what song you're in love with as well, then find another podcast.
I do have to actually agree with him. In listening through to editing the Pelham 123 episode, which was, I think, two or three ago now, that bit was actually quite funny. It's rare that I laugh at our own podcast.
Oh, there you go.
But I think that episode generally, but the Pelham 123
was quite a pat on the back. We'll submit that one for the Sony Award, shall we?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, nice, we'll do that.
But at least, if you've not listened to that one, then go back and check it out, because I think that was quite a good one.
Yeah. Okay.
More comments on G.I. Joe. We had an email from Johan saying that he recently saw G.I. Joe, and I must say, it wasn't as bad as the critics say. By no means is it award-winning, but a step in the right direction from Transformers 2.
I entirely agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is good. Transformers 2 is a bad... they're kind of different sides of the same coin or something. They're both making a similar sort of film. G.I. Joe did it much better than Transformers 2.
Mm. And Jan continues on about the passing of John Hughes. He says that he watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Still remains my favourite John Hughes film. Thanks again, guys. And Jenny. There you go.
Thank you. And Ferris Bueller's an awesome film.
It is an awesome film.
That is a brilliant film. And I was very pleased to have actually watched it as a kid, because I tried to introduce one of my old boyfriends to it and he hated it. So that's why we're not together.
Oh, really? That is the reason.
Oh, dear.
You've got to draw the line somewhere.
Also got an email from Jed with a review of G.I. Joe, which, again, as is true to form, we'll say we put it on the website, intend to put it on the website, and then forget to put it on the website. But do harangue us about putting stuff on the site, and it will be there, because we keep the emails of the websites there. We're just rubbish. But thank you very much for it. And summing up, Jed says, in the end, G.I. Joe is a fairly entertaining trifle, perfect for the attention impaired, and those who like their action flick served with lots of less than convincing CGI sauce. I think that's a weird one, actually, because the CGI isn't brilliant, but it kind of does the job at the same. It's not flawed. Like it doesn't take you out of it, like Indiana Jones did. It's more just sort of the whole thing. It just adds to the cartoony feel, I think. It's a delightfully B-grade featherweight fantasy fuel for your inner 10-year-old boy that stays on the right side of average, brackets, Joe.
Oh, see what you did there? Nice. Average GI.
So he gives it a 3 out of 5, and I think that's a fair rating. I think 2 would be too harsh, 4 would be way over the top.
Mm.
3 is pretty much bang on the money. Jed also, he sent another email following on from a previous podcast, but because we've been away, we're catching up.
Indeed.
Saying, while I was happy to hear Jen back at last, the 6 degrees of separation episode flatlined for me.
Boo to criticism.
Sorry, how dare you come up with constructive and well thought out and rational argument about your own personal opinion. It must have been fun to play. It was confusing and frustrating to listen to.
Oh, no.
No.
I haven't listened to it yet. I'll have to have a listen back.
Well, I think you should. It's confusing and frustrating.
Well, very true. It said, if I was linked Justin Timberlake to Frank Sinatra, it'd be that Justin Timberlake is one of the front runners to play Frank Sinatra in a Martin Scorsese directed biopic. I'm looking forward to normal service.
Well, Jed, if you think that links Justin Timberlake to Frank Sinatra, that he's going to play Frank Sinatra, you've misunderstood the rules of the game. You see, this is why you found it confusing and frustrating, as I did your email, to be fair. Thank you, sir.
Doesn't mean it.
Oh, dear. He does, but he's just being irrational.
So I've had a drink.
Really? Didn't you drive down here?
With lunch.
Right, fair. But then we got an email from James saying, I really liked episode 9.
Exactly.
And a big fan of 6 degrees of separation. You see, keeping up the balance. He also has a way to connect Frank Sinatra to Justin Timberlake in 6 steps, which is Frank Sinatra to Angela Lansbury in The Manchurian Candidate, Angela Lansbury to Glynis Johns in The Court Jester.
He didn't even mention Murder, She Wrote. That's it.
Well, you know, but it's films.
Oh, good point. He understood the rules.
Glynis Johns to Julie Andrews in Mary Poppins, Julie Andrews to Anne Hathaway in The Princess Diaries, Anne Hathaway to Dwayne Johnson in Get Smart, and Dwayne Johnson to Justin Timberlake in Southland Tales.
Nicely
done. Done it in 6.
Good
nice,
work,
good move.
Work. Well done, James, in California.
Nice mention of The Princess Diaries. That's it.
No, except you see what you've done there. You've confused The Princess Diaries, which you don't care about, with The Princess Diaries 2, which you're obsessed with because it's got Chris Pine in it.
Not quite obsessed. Obsessed is a strong word, but I did enjoy it when it was on.
You
Princess Diaries 2?
Yes.
Get out.
Jen happened to be round at mine, turned on the TV, and saw Princess Diaries 2, which she knew Chris Pine was in, with what looks suspiciously like a wig.
It really
does. And Jen,
does he play the princess?
No.
But imagine. No, he plays the.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. But imagine the most stereotypical mental image of, like, a 13-year-old girl sitting on a bed, or lying on a bed, watching a film, looking at a boy she's obsessed with. Kind of legs up in the air, hands on her. Jen was pretty much looking exactly like that the whole way
through. Did you have a sleepover? Was it a pyjama party?
It's not a good film. Although, come on, actually, I put on Twitter, which is, because it takes place in this film. Well, you shouldn't really talk about Princess Diaries, but it's funny.
You are, though.
No. I know, because I was forced to watch this mess of a film. But it takes place in this fictional European country where everyone has a mix of accents. And they seem to have nothing but parades with people going down the streets and people standing at the side of the road waving. And it was like, it just looked like North Korea, in a more flamboyant way.
That's Princess Diaries 3, the North Korean years.
It pretty much was. As citizens, you must stand at the side of the road and celebrate your rulers. But in a very happy way. But I just like to think that behind the scenes, Anne Hathaway was taking people out and having them shot. Because that makes it more watchable for me. Yeah, so anyway, we got slightly diverted.
Fair point.
Emails.
I would say, do let us know what you thought of the 6 degrees of separation, or the many degrees of separation episode, because clearly the verdict is split.
Yeah, we've had more yays than nays.
More yays than yays. We'd like to know, because it's something we're trying a bit different, and, you know, we'll be doing a few more specials in the future, of course. So what would you like in your specials? Would you like something a bit quizzy, gamey, like The Great Separation, or not? Or just maybe 40 minutes of silence, I don't know. What would you prefer?
Very true. Or if so, then, and also come up with specific ideas. So if you like sort of games, then what sort of film-related games?
I think I've
games?
Got a movie quiz on the way I'm working up, I reckon, for Christmas quiz. You know, that's often quite nice, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
And finally, well, from Johan again, catching up, saying, "Hello, folks at Movie Banter. My favourite Kevin Bacon films are horribly B movie." Well, he's done a lot, including Tremors, of course, which is the ultimate B movie. Yeah. Number one would have to be 2005 Beauty Shop, where he played a flamboyant hairdresser, which I've never seen. I don't even think ever heard.
Well, I've never seen a flamboyant hairdresser either. I've never heard of a flamboyant hairdresser either.
Yes, and number two would have to be National Lampoon's Animal House, where he played Chip Diller.
Yes,
very true. Which the famous, "Thank you, sir, may I have another?"
Oh, is that right?
Yes, that was Kevin Bacon.
Is that Chip Diller?
Yes. Hang on, or is it?
Diller.
Yeah, it is. I've not seen it in far too long. I'm thinking
Are you singing Thriller?
To the tune of Diller.
Diller.
This is why we don't let you play.
You're such a Diller. You really are. So those are the emails for now. We've got some more as well, but we'll store them away for a future episode. So
yes,
thank you.
Because
for
frankly, that's a lot of emails.
It's plenty of emails. But you can email us more. Please do. podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Yes. Or you can send us comments through Twitter as well, @MovieBanter. Anyway.
So, we've got in this week of movie history, as ever, but we've got so many film reviews to do. Maybe we should just do one of those.
Well, yeah, I'd say Inglourious Basterds. And also, we saw it yesterday.
We did.
I think it's his most ambitious film to date. Well, I don't quite think it's his best film, but it's kind of hard to choose because it swings up on one end of the scale in terms of ambition and scope, but then swings down on the other in terms of being slightly too long. But, I mean, not to any great detriment. You're scowling.
Well, I think...
Have you gone off it over
time? I liked it, but I think in terms of scope and ambition, it was a bit too much for him, because I think what makes Tarantino's other films work well is you compare it to a lot of other films, and Tarantino can work with just 8 scenes or so in a film, just long scenes of 10 minutes long with this... You know, his dialogue is brilliant. He's got this wonderful... and certainly in Inglourious Basterds, there's a good probably 2 or 3 scenes which I thought really shine, because there's something going on, but we know something at another level.
Yeah.
And it's will they, won't they find out?
Yes.
And I mean, it's no secret. He's called it a Jewish revenge movie, really.
Yeah.
So it's about Nazis and Jews, and there's this guy, the Jew Hunter, who's this big SS guy who's after them. And so there are scenes where you're thinking, will that person be caught out or not? And I think those scenes are brilliant. But as a result, those scenes can be very long, brilliantly long, but still long. And as a result, I think things like, for me, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs work better because they were quite tight in their scope. And they're just about a bunch of guys in a room rather than the Second World War, which I think is quite a sweeping canvas to try to
get something against. But it's little stories within that.
Yeah, certainly.
I think the length of the scene helps to the tension, though.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I was actually aware the second time... I think that's why the second time around it felt longer. Because the first opening scene, I was hugely tense the whole way through, first time I saw it, because you just don't know quite where it's going or what's coming. And it could all kick off at any moment, or it could all peter out, and you just don't know. Whereas the second time around, I knew exactly what was happening and when. And so, I mean, the dialogue's still very good and very watchable, but because the tension drops off, it gets a little bit... I'm more aware of its length.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Although there are probably equally long scenes in his other films, but that sort of struck me particularly.
I suppose the whole point of it is the will it happen, and then once you know,
yeah.
Well, of course, it's not going to be the same.
Yes,
so. Of course, yeah.
And same, there's a scene in a bar halfway through, where again you don't quite know where it's going or when, but then once you do, that sort of pans out as well. But it's still very good, and it's still he still has one of the best ears for dialogue of most people.
I think he can write a brilliant scene, probably better than anyone I can pretty much think of. But when it stitches together to a movie, I mean, he's still done this chapter thing in this, which he did back in Pulp Fiction as well. And it's sort of half worked, half didn't for me, really, those chapter things.
No, I liked it.
Yeah, it was okay, but I think he's much better at his scene writing. I think it's just a bit too. I think the trouble with any director in his position, where his fans really are in awe of him and his actors, you know, people want to work with him, and so he's just given so much free rein to be Tarantino, whereas actually maybe a bit half an hour of editing might have been helpful.
I really like the film, and thinking about it again, I forgot actually how much I enjoyed the tension, and it's almost like a play in many scenes. It is, you can just
you can
put that on anywhere and it'd be tense and really good. The only thing that I didn't like was a cameo by Mike Myers.
That really put me off. See, it didn't really put me off, but it slightly grated.
It grated a lot with
me. Just he sounds like Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Not quite, but almost. And
again, it's him dressed up with a dodgy sort of makeup, disguising makeup, and it's just like, it's Austin Powers' granddad. It's just,
I think, particularly as Brits, it probably stands out as not good, because we see that scene and go, the accent sounds like an American thinks that's how Second World War happened for the Brits.
And it suddenly became like as if he was taking the mick out of the Brits rather than having that character.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Because
there are three people in that scene, but the two main people in that scene, Mike Myers and
Michael Fassbender,
yes.
Mm. And Churchill, who just sits there, nodding his head like a dog.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was actually quite a nice, surreal touch, because you come in and since of the world of it, you're just there going, is that really him? Or is that not
him? It's not really him, he was an actor, Jen.
Yeah, thank you, John.
He's dead. sorry to break this to you.
But I think we were sharing the same feeling as the soldier. Do you address it or not?
Yeah.
Okay, a bit of a white elephant.
Yeah, yeah. I think that scene is meant to be sort of a stereotypical, almost British war film, semi-propaganda-esque.
Yeah.
Still believe what ho.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, again, it may just be British sensitivity, but I think it's fine with a Brit playing. I mean, Michael Fassbender works.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Because he's kind of, you feel he knows that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Whereas with Mike Myers, it was slightly more
laughing at himself.
Yeah, but it just didn't quite work.
It's probably the sort of film Tarantino wants to make, in that he's making these exploitation films and trying to sort of slightly parody all the films that have gone before. And you know, there is another film called Inglourious Basterds back in the 70s, which is he's sort of trying to do a slight pastiche of. And so given he's trying to be influenced by all that, I'm sure he's got a reason for doing it that way. But as a viewer, I don't think we necessarily got it in the same way that he probably intended it.
Yeah. Mind you, you said the same thing about the title, because the title is misspelled.
Yeah.
But I think the original wasn't.
No, it wasn't. No.
But he said that he has a reason for misspelling the title. Mm. There is an artistic reason for doing it. But if he talked about it, it would kind of undermine the whole thing.
Right, okay.
So it's just a secret. I shouldn't mention it. Oops, I just mentioned it.
No, it's not. No, because he's not saying what the reason is. He's not saying what the reason is.
Oh, right.
But he's just saying it wasn't. Well,
I know, it's like
not
a guy, I've got a secret. I'm going to keep it.
If you're clever, you'll work it out. Uh-huh. Yeah.
No, he didn't even imply it was anything to work out. It always is just, you know, his own. He just fancied doing it that way. But there was a thought process behind it. Cast-wise, we, of course, should mention Christoph Waltz.
Yes.
Who plays Hans Lander.
Mm. Yeah, he's excellent.
He is phenomenal. Because what Transformers 2 said was
right.
So this is right. No, Transformers 2 we said was wildly uneven.
Yeah.
In terms of you get the sort of it's terror, but all hey comedy, and then lusting after Megan Fox, and then and it's all just all over the place. Glorious Bastards could almost be the same way, except that Quentin Tarantino's done it and he knows what he's doing, and so you get moments of, I mean, especially in the opening scene, there's a moment where it's very tense. And there's suddenly kind of a relief of there's a comedy moment.
Mm.
Partly Hans Lander says something in a funny way at one point, and then he does something funny. And it's not funny in the scene, but because of what's going on.
He plays excellently. He breaks that tension. He creates the tension as well by being so. It's the classic way of portraying a bad guy is quite charming.
Yes.
He was.
It's like a classic Bond villain, really, sort of thing.
In an interview, he said that now he's suddenly getting loads of offers from all over the place to do all sorts of things, and it's a little bit mental. And the thought occurred to me, I'd be amazed if someone is not offering him a Bond villain.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, it's almost, it would almost be a step down.
Yeah.
Because a Bond villain wouldn't be as well written.
No.
Unless they can, mind you, Quentin Tarantino has always said he wants to do a Bond film.
That'd be great.
So that'd be brilliant.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I kind of liked just him as a Bond villain, but I almost wouldn't, because it wouldn't be as good as this.
It's two-dimensional, isn't it?
Yeah, he reminded me in this of the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang
Bang.
Yes! That sort of, he's got that look on his face of, and yet that smile that says, I can be your friend, but I'll probably ultimately kill you.
Yes.
It's just the fact that you know he knows everything.
Yeah.
Well, except we don't, well, sort of do.
Yeah, but this is it. It's the impression that you're looking at him and he can just see right through you.
Yeah.
Well, like, oh, dear.
Yeah, because without spelling out which scenes, because there's one scene when we don't know if he knows everything or not.
Yes.
But then there's another scene where we're fairly sure he knows nothing.
Yes.
But because what we know about him, he might know something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then there's a scene towards the end where we know he knows something, but he's giving the impression he doesn't know anything.
Yes.
And yeah, so it keeps.
He's excellent. He's a reason to.
Very good.
I think he was more watchable in it than Brad Pitt, I thought.
Yes.
Because Brad Pitt is extremely funny in this, and his character is meant to be quite broad.
I thought he was. I mean, I laughed out loud at the. There's the accent piece.
Oh, it's very, very. It's
funny.
A low level.
Very,
of,
very funny.
Of
yeah.
Rubbishness.
Very, very funny. And actually, in that depiction, I thought Brad Pitt's character was like Tarantino, sort of saying, "Here's your classic American Joe."
Yes.
Which and also quite self-deprecating of Americans, I thought.
Yeah.
That bit. Sort of saying, we go in guns blazing as if we know best. We don't always necessarily.
Yes.
No, I thought it was. I thought it was good. Despite my early protestations that it wasn't as good as *Pulp Fiction* and *Reservoir Dogs*, I still think Tarantino, on a bad day, is still better than most others.
And also because it's not. I can't think of any film he's done where he's just sort of retreading. You say, "Oh, she's like *Pulp Fiction* again, but a bit different."
No, it's not.
It's not like Guy Ritchie, for example, where they make
exactly.
*Lock, Stock* and they make *Snatch*. And it's basically *Lock, Stock*, but slightly different people. All of his films are different, which is why you can't really compare them.
I did see though that actually in terms of casting for this film, that in discussion for cast, well, for a start, there's Harvey Keitel and Samuel Jackson make very brief appearances
in
some way.
Vocal
contributions. Michael Madsen was considered for a part. Tim Roth was considered for a part. A lot of people from the Tarantino verse were all potentially, and then none of them could do it for various scheduling reasons. And it made me think, what a film could it have been if they had Tim Roth, Michael Madsen, and so on.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, the casting I thought was very good, but potentially some of those guys in it could have elevated
I'm assuming Tim Roth was probably going to be Michael Fassbender's character.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing which is good about this, in that I think without exception, actually except for Mike Myers, I think pretty much everyone is all Americans playing Americans, Brits playing Brits. Well, there's only one Brit. Mm. And Germans playing Germans, French playing French. So everyone sticks to their nationalities, as far as I know.
Well, Michael Fassbender is German, playing.
I don't know. For some reason, I thought it was English.
Well, he's a German who was born in Germany, speaks German as his first language, then lived in England, now lives in England, and England's his adopted home, and it's his second language.
Right.
And so there's sort of layer upon layer of irony in that he is then playing an Englishman who is then in the film playing a German, who is then found out potentially because of his accent that he couldn't do, even though he has a perfect German accent, because he is German. But
how long did he live in Germany for?
I think as a kid growing up.
Fair enough. See, I didn't know that about him, because I found myself, when watching it, thinking, because I have no idea about what a good German accent is for an English speaker. And just found myself thinking, it's a good thing they found someone English who can do a good German accent, clearly, or speak it quite well. Yeah. And turns out that's why.
Yes.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay. So but for the sake of argument, he's a Brit playing a Brit. Actually, one other casting, Eli Roth's character, who I didn't. The character I liked, Eli Roth, was sort of half and half. Some scenes, the bear Jew with the bat. In some scenes, he was quite good. Mm. In other bits, he was a little bit. He's not really an actor first and foremost, is he?
No, he's a director. Mm. We did Hostel and all that.
Yes, he also directed the film within a film.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But his character was originally going to be played by Adam Sandler.
That's right.
But he wasn't around to film it. And that could have been quite interesting. I think he would have been better. But Eli Roth doesn't ruin the film.
I was just wondering, given the Eli Roth character, Donnie Donowitz.
Yes, are you about to link them up
To Lee Donowitz, the film director in True Romance, who did the film Coming Home in a Body Bag, another war film thing. So, and given Tarantino likes to make relatives of brothers and cousins and relatives appear in the different films, so you've got a Reservoir Dogs character potentially related to Isn't it Vincent Vega is meant to be...
Vincent Vega and Vic Vega. And Vic Michael Vega. Madsen and John Travolta, which is a film apparently he does want to make. So
potentially
point.
Brothers or something like that. So given that there is a Tarantino-verse where people are related,
yes, mm-hmm.
can we therefore presume that Donnie Donowitz, Eli Roth's character, is father or uncle or something to
yes, he has,
Lee Donowitz?
He has either pretty much stated that.
Because if that's the case, if that means that Inglourious Basterds is part of the same universe as
yes.
Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs.
There are two universes, apparently. There's the realer-than-real universe.
Right.
And I think it may just be the movie universe, or the movie in a movie, or the...
Okay.
Something like that universe. And I think it may be someone at Ain't It Cool News who came up with some of those definitions, and then Quentin Tarantino pretty much looked at it and said, oh, actually, yeah, that's about right.
Right.
But the movie one, like, I think sort of Death Proof, for example,
oh, yes.
is kind of in the movie one.
Right.
So people, and I think then like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction and probably this are in the realer than real ones. So someone in Reservoir Dogs could go to a cinema and see Death Proof.
I see. Okay.
But
right.
but not meet the Kurt Russell character in Death Proof because that's
no,
in the film.
Because, yeah. But I think there yeah. are some sort of overlaps.
Because I was wondering, would it mean, therefore, that in Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs, has anyone ever mentioned the outcome of the Second World
War? Oh, good point.
Because that would change, potentially,
yes.
the history of that.
But not that I can think of.
No.
Because also...
And that's a movie mistake in waiting, in a future Tarantino film. If,
yes.
If someone mentions that. You know.
Because Inglourious Basterds, well, it does end you know, towards the end of the Second World War.
True.
Anyway,
true.
So yeah. yeah, most of it still
yeah,
happens
fair
as...
Point,
yeah.
fair point, yes.
I think he said in interviews that if the characters in this film all existed, he thinks... Events would have transpired as they do in this film.
We have talked ingloriously bastardly, probably farting.
Well, that is very true.
Given we have four other films to fit in.
Can we do a week in movie history, please? Please, please.
Jen's missed it, clearly.
You're such a fan of the fan of the same.
Anyway, Inglourious Basterds, short version is it's very good. Go and see it.
Go
yes,
and see
enjoy.
It.
Yes. Enjoy. I mean, not necessarily best, but still very good and well.
Yes. Good.
And any criticisms are largely sort of you know, loving, affectionate criticisms of something you think is brilliant.
So now to In This Week in Movie History.
Hey.
Speaking of rewriting history, or not, let's have a little look. Don't look at the screen.
Sorry.
What, Jennifer?
Jennifer.
Jen's
I'm
cheating.
Dyslexic. I can't read that fast.
You can't. You could just you could lose the that fast bit. Of the sentence.
I can't read.
Yeah. I never learned to read.
Jennifer Stephen Masters. Did you?
What's your Stephen obsession?
Which way could go?
Your middle name, Stephen.
Yeah, exactly.
Stephen.
Yeah, your middle name, Stephen.
Yeah. Your mother's middle name, Stephen. Why are you imposing it on everyone else?
So, in this week of history,
yes.
here's the date and the event. You tell me the film.
Yay.
That simple. Okay.
Right.
August 20th, 1973. Police are dispatched to a remote farmhouse in Travis County, where they find the butchered remains of 33 victims. It's not a comedy, I should point out.
Could be. What year was that again?
Is it?
It's 1973. Travis County, which is a county in Texas.
There
you go.
I was already thinking it, that's why it was out so yeah, fast.
Texas Chainsaw Moussaka, the Greek version.
Oh, dear.
That's why they needed so many.
Exactly, that's what it is. A lot to go around. August 22nd, 1485. 1485. A particular king is killed after losing his horse at the Battle of Bosworth Field.
Oh, my history's gone. Richard the... No. Is it Richard the Third?
Yes.
Oh, really?
I was waiting for Jen to just go, and then you would have got the point.
Oh, there you go. You should know this. You do Shakespeare.
Yes.
A horse.
Really...
My kingdom for a horse. Okay, 1972. We're in... I'm being heckled now by Pooh. 1972.
So, actually, you missed the classic... You missed the classic... Or you got the classic cinema one, and I got the Shakespeare one. Yeah. It's all going wrong.
You're learning.
Okay, everything to play for. Everything to play for.
Okay.
August 22nd, 1970. Shut up. August 72. August 1972. A bank robbery to afford a transsexual operation becomes a siege.
Doesn't go well. It's not a good one. The one in my mind...
No.
I'm not sure it's actually about a transsexual operation or not, and if it's not, my lack of cinema knowledge will become woefully apparent. It's Dog Day Afternoon.
Correct.
Ah, oh, fantastic.
That's the one. 1989, August 23rd. Seven strangers hide in a farmhouse, different farmhouse from the Travis County one only.
Okay.
Seven strangers hide in a farmhouse as the bodies of the recently dead reactivate and attempt to eat them.
It's going to be one of the dead films.
It's near Evans City in Pennsylvania, which is where I was last week. That's slightly worrying.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Day of the Dead.
No, it's, I guess, close. Something of the...
Night of the Living
Dead. There you go. Well
done. Oh, my God, that was just annoying.
What a guess. Well done. Okay, two more. Anything to play for.
Okay.
Except nothing. August 29th, 1885. The townsfolk arrange who will pick up Clara, the new schoolteacher, but no one volunteers. Well done.
I won.
And finally, August 29th, 1997, Skynet becomes self-aware and destroys human civilization.
Terminator 2.
Terminator 4.
Or Terminator.
Terminator 4. I've got down the Terminator here.
Yeah, I think it's the same day.
You went for the first and second, you went for the fourth. So exactly, so John takes that point. So the winner is...
I think it's pretty much a tie, actually.
It's a tie. Let's call it a tie.
I win.
Okay.
What? How does that work?
I always
let me explain
lose.
To you the meaning of the word tie. If you always lose, that means you should lose today as well.
Next!
Okay, next. Exactly. Move on. Come on, move on. Let's roll it through. What are we going to talk about now?
I'd say Time Traveler's Wife.
Time Traveler's Wife.
Just because it's the second biggest film.
Okay, Time Traveler's Wife.
Looking at current charts.
So this is the... The book, based on the book by Audrey Audrey Hufurufur.
Sounds like a Steve Martin character.
The Time Traveller's Wife stars Rachel McAdams
and
Eric Bana, which I think is great as a time traveller. I'm about to disappear. Bana! So there you go. I think it works out well. And I saw it last night. I thought it was all right.
I did enjoy it a lot.
Right. It was a good movie.
I mean, the premise of it is it's essentially a romantic drama.
Hmm.
But where the man of the piece randomly travels through time.
Yes.
And he can't control it.
Is it a true story?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a documentary. So it's an interesting mix of sort of sci-fi to a degree, but also romantic drama stuff. And yeah, it was a surprisingly touching story.
I thought it was, it was a big hit as a book. It was going to be a similar... In fact, the rights to the film were bought by Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. Before the book even hit the shelves, they read an advance copy and said, "Yep, we'll have that one, thank you." And I think rightly so. I think it's one of those, pulls on the right heartstrings and all that. And,
yeah, it's not too mushy though.
Not too mushy, no. And it's always kind of the perfect film in many ways. It's got the romance for the ladies. It's got time travel for the boys.
Yeah,
so there you are.
It is because as a sort of sci-fi watching, I was enjoying. Sort of the timeline juggling and sort of working out how it went. And I imagine anyone sort of not sci-fi inclined. Won't be bothering to work out when what happens and just sort of enjoying it as it comes. Whereas I was paying less attention to all this emotional rubbish and just thinking, oh, so that was then, and then he's jumped back, so they've swapped, and now he's doing that. Ah, okay. If you're not a romantically drama sort of inclined person, then just stay clear. But yeah, I think for anyone on the fence, it could have works for everyone.
Reminded me of The Lake House.
Yes, very similar.
Sort of tone to that. My only problem with it is I took my wife to go and see it, who likes romantic films. Doesn't like anything not real world based.
I was wondering how she
and she actually enjoyed it. She did.
Okay.
Because before we went to see it, I did say, just go with it, okay? Because it's gonna, you're gonna be sat there going, well, that wouldn't happen. Of course it wouldn't. He's a time traveller. But I did say just go with it, and I should have heeded my own advice
really?
And just gone with it. Because on a few occasions I just felt it asked more questions than it answered.
Yes. Back to the Future, the whole film is based on you've gone back, you've changed something, how does that affect the future? This is different, that's different, you need to repair this and mend that. This pretty much has one or two lines where they just say, I've tried changing things, you can never do it. Let's get on with it.
Yeah.
And so the time travel, time travel is important to the film generally, but it's not...
I think you've got to be very clear on your rules as time travel in a time travel film, and I don't think it was... quite as clear.
No, because we it's quite rare we see much happen when he's time travelling, if that makes sense.
Yes.
He tends to go back and sort of have a chat, and that's it.
Mm. Well, my problems were, for a start, he's quite free with information, he just occasionally tells people, this might happen, this will happen. And in every other time travel film you see, the person who's sort of the doc behind it, the brains behind it, always says, don't go telling people things, you'll, change the future or it'll all be wrong and all that. Mm. And he does it quite willy-nilly, and it's not even referred to. Also the fact he doesn't only time travel, he place travels as well.
Yes.
Which is, I was quite expecting it to be just a time travel to
the
place.
Yeah, that hadn't occurred to me, actually.
And it's just all a bit random where he just appears. And they're always quite, I think at one point he just says, oh, I'm always drawn to the events like gravity.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, fair enough, but it's quite convenient. They're always within walking distance of your house.
Well, I think very often they're not. Mostly,
but he never sort of jumps to Africa or something like that.
Yes.
It's always down the road, roughly somewhere, pretty much.
Mm.
He time travels as a kid from driving in a car on a road to his house a few weeks ago. Then suddenly, so it's back again. So it's all a bit over the place with that. And there's this idea as well Yeah, we know in the film that he, when he time travels, he time travels naked.
Yes. Always.
He
you want to be unencumbered. Well, exactly. You want to be swinging free.
Yeah, except I suppose so, yeah. And so he always appears naked. Ooh, dear, whoops.
Yes.
And,
but it makes it an entertaining situation where he has to go and run.
It's quite
like when he gets arrested at one point.
Well, yeah, that's quite amusing.
He gets arrested and they say, right, we're bringing a guy in. Yeah, don't bother. Why not? Turns around, he's gone.
He's gone, exactly, But then, because later in the film, we then find that potentially if there was another time traveller who may also potentially time travel, therefore naked as well, but it would be less appropriate for that person.
Yeah,
it'd
be a bigger problem.
Naked.
Yes, it'd be a and different sort of film if we saw that.
It's never dealt with. That was just one of the questions I was asking. It was never actually dealt with.
At the same time, I watched the film, that never occurred to me. It has now.
It might be covered in the book. Thing is, I started reading the book, and as you can imagine with this film, if you with the story, if you lose your way a little bit, then you got to start again.
Yeah.
So I haven't read the end of it, but there's a lot more from what I remember. There's a lot more in the book than there is in the film, but obviously you can't go into too much detail because it's quite complicated.
Well, true.
As it is anyway.
And I've heard that in other reviews, actually. There's a lot, because someone else raised the problem of when he can travel backwards and forwards. Like they meet in a library right at the start, and he doesn't know who she is.
Yes.
And yet he has time travelled, and yet there's like time travelling forwards and backwards, and in the book it's made much clearer. But the thing is, you can't.
No,
we don't get
that. Made sense to me, though.
Well, it did make to me as well, but I think it just wasn't as clear as it could have been in the film.
No, that's true. I mean, they help with different haircuts and with having greying. Yeah, I think I'd rather it was that way. Well, it's the old thing, which I think I referred to before, someone saying, I'd rather be confused for 10 minutes than bored for 5 seconds.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
And I'd rather it was that rather than every time you turned up. They had the conversation, what year is this? I'm this age. You're that age? All right, so it's this time, and so we must be now.
Yeah,
and they just established it.
Yeah, just
whereas in the book,
crack on.
I think you said in the book.
The book, at the beginning of each sort of chapter, they have his age, her age, and time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, which is a lot easier to do in the book.
That's what I wanted to see. That's what I was...
Yeah, but it would sort of take a bit of the... It would pull you out of it a bit in the film.
Well, it would do. It would do. They'd have to find a way to do it.
I think they did the best thing with just letting it glide.
Yeah, because it's not... A lot of the time, it doesn't really matter.
I stand here wrong.
No, it's not. No, if it bothered you, it bothered you. But, you're in the minority. Which, of course, means you're wrong.
I did think it was good.
Yeah, and I thought it's quite poignant, obviously, about, I'm a bit of a daydreamer myself, and sometimes you wonder if you could go back to a certain point in time and say things or change things, as you could do, or maybe move into the future with this kind of aspirational hope that you have. And it's lovely. There's a bit in here where as a couple, they are arguing, and he comes back from a previous time when they are very, very much in love, and she allows herself to sort of... Because she still loves him, and she allows herself to sort of just... indulge in the love again, and it's very poignant and sweet.
Yeah, because she's not, I mean, obviously it's still him, but she's not angry with him. She's angry with the other him.
Yeah. It's very lovely.
Yeah, no, I thought it was good.
See it.
I thought it was good. Yes, go see it. Worth a look.
Dead Island Flicks this week, set now quickly.
Yes, let's do it.
I would say best Quentin Tarantino film.
Rightio.
Okay.
As Inglourious Basterds, first film for a while.
Indeed.
Why not? So we'll muse on that, and then do it at the end. Got two films left, Ugly Truth and Coco Chanel. I can do The Ugly Truth in about two sentences, because times are ticking.
Go on, then.
It's not very good, but pass the time.
There you go. Good.
Actually, that's one sentence.
There you go. You got one bonus one.
No, I don't need two.
That'll do.
It passed the time. Yeah. Not very good, but pass the time. The Proposal is better.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. No, The Proposal is not brilliant, but it's better than... In current romantic comedy fare, it's only really those two.
It's a shame. I like Katherine Heigl.
I do. I like Gerard Butler, but the film is just...
I saw the trailer, I thought, forget it. It was one of those... No. When the trailer started, I thought, this would be quite nice for the wife, and then, it looked a bit...
Having said that, it did tread a nice middle ground of being not a sort of an adult Vince Vaughn-esque laddie comedy, but it's more of a romantic comedy, but did have a lot of good swearing in it.
Oh, really?
It was
really?
It's surprisingly foul-mouthed for a rom-com.
Gerard Butler
which
looks
I quite
like he's got a good swear in him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting his swear.
So, I mean, it was fine, but it was just... I just left a bit disappointed.
Yeah, no, fair point.
Okay, cool. And then Coco Avant Chanel.
Avant.
It's a French film.
Frenchy language.
It is a French film. It's very good, and like with quite a lot of French films, it's very slow, I think, in pace, but beautifully formed. But the problem with this film is that obviously it's for people are going to go and see it, like the fashion. I've got interest in the fashion, and that's actually a relatively minor point, and which I feel was actually rushed at the end. But it is a very good sort of love story. But I think that there was just a bit too much of a leap. Lovely seeds being sown about what happens in later life, about having this huge empire, but I think just wanted to actually see a bit more of it coming about, because it was obviously before it even starts.
So yeah, see, it seemed like, I mean, when you're talking about it, it seemed like an odd decision for, if you're making a film about a person, I can sort of see why, oh, what about her earlier life? But yeah. Then you're kind of cutting off what you know about someone.
Mm.
It was like saying, yeah, we're going to make the Johnny Cash film, but his only life before, and then he just picks up a guitar, hey, this is pretty good, credits. Yes, and it's yeah, like, yeah. Well, no, that's, you're kind of missing out a big chunk of what you want to see.
I suppose because the clue's in the title, Coco before Chanel.
Yes.
But by putting Chanel in the title, even though it says before, in other words, we don't want to talk about this, you put Chanel in the title, you think, well, expect some Chanel.
Yeah, well, to be fair, her name is Chanel, so it should be Chanel before Coco.
Chanel.
Because her real name's Gabrielle Chanel.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's the way around. Yeah, her name is actually
so
Chanel.
So what's the Coco part then?
It's her nickname that
she
got.
Used to drink.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So Coco before Chanel is just in terms of drinks. You know, drink some Coco.
Actually, it's
in Chanel. And gargle with some Chanel.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's a chaser.
Wash the taste.
Coco chaser.
But yeah, actually, she's got nothing about the perfume or anything like that, so which is fine. Audrey Tautou is a very good, you know, beautiful, perfect, looks the part. And it's a good film.
But it almost sounds like you're just making a film about some woman. If it's before she did anything.
She's got an interesting life. She starts off working as a singer in a bar with prostitutes around, and the Coco is, she's named Coco after the dog she sings about.
Okay.
Indiana Jones. And the two people that she stays with who become her lovers and her investors, as they were. I mean, it's an interesting story, but it's just the fact that what we know about her is the fashion, and we just want to see a little bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems beautifully done, the fact that we see her in these groundbreaking clothes, because at the time women were wearing corsets.
Huge, and groundbreaking.
Yeah,
just like drills.
Concrete trousers. Yeah, it's an unusual look.
But for women, it was a big breakthrough to get away from corsets and the big hair and the decorations and being someone's trinket to actually going, I can't ride in this. I can't actually breathe in this. I want to be able to eat food and comfortable.
Are you saying we need a follow-up film called Coco during Chanel?
Maybe that's what they're planning.
Maybe that is it.
Elizabeth, and then Elizabeth the Golden Years.
Yeah, maybe.
But it sounds a little bit bait and switch like, and so, hey, Coco Chanel, come and see this film, or we're going to give you nothing.
It's a good film, but obviously I'd recommend girls go and see it with your mum as I did. Don't take your boyfriends. Don't put them through that.
So, Desert Island Flicks?
Okay.
Yes, Quentin Tarantino film.
Indeed, best Tarantino film. Shoot.
That's not one of his films.
Pick another one.
Sounds like a good one.
Fair enough.
Okay, I'm going to go for the first one that I saw then, and therefore what I think is the greatest, and that is Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, fair point.
I got in there first.
Well done. Well done. There's only five, you've only made five films.
So, Paul?
Pulp Fiction again?
Is that lame?
No, you can. That's right. Well, limited.
I'll change your Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
Fair enough. In terms of visceral opening films, it's one of the best debut films.
I'll go with that one. I think I actually prefer Pulp Fiction, but Reservoir Dogs is cleaner and tighter and neater.
No, that's true.
And yeah.
Fair enough. In which case, keep it.
It's a great play as well.
Ah, true.
Well, there's a Joe Brand sketch show years ago had a sketch of a women's amateur dramatics group doing Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
And it was they did the last scene, word for word,
nice.
As the last scene of Reservoir Dogs. And it was hilarious because they're all like 70 and just swearing like troopers. It's wonderful.
As all 70-year-olds do. Which is, I will go Kill Bill, both parts combined, because it makes life easier.
Mm.
Because not only Kill Bill 2, the Superman speech, I love.
Mm-hmm.
And in Kill Bill 1, the fight is one of the best things he's ever done. So, yeah, so Kill Bill.
So that means that Inglourious Basterds clearly is Tarantino at least his second worst film.
Oh, that's true.
Of the five.
Ooh.
True.
So,
yeah.
Work to be done, QT.
But that depends what you want from films.
True.
But, yes.
I'd actually probably put Inglourious as my joint second with Kill Bill.
Do drop us an email. Any thoughts? Podcast at moviebanter.co.uk.
And in the meantime, have an extremely good week.
Indeed. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.